Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is June 3rd, 2016, and today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. Now, I know I had put out a little bit of press, including I had written in the Power Peak this week, that my guest was going to be Michael Murdad, but he's going to be next week, so no worries about that. Michael will join me next week. But for today, it's author Susan Dugan, and our topic is Workbook Lesson 193, All Things Are Lessons God Would Have Me Learn. So if you have a copy of the workbook handy, you might want to grab it so that you could read along with us. And I know that you guys are familiar with Susan, but just in case you're not, maybe you're new today, maybe you haven't ever caught the show before. Susan is an author who has written 3 books on forgiveness: Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness, Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, and Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness. And all 3 of those are wonderful books that I just love. I've got all 3 on my bookshelf. I pull them off because Susan has this very, what I consider, wry sense of humor. And the way she writes these little vignettes on forgiveness, they just bring everything really right back home. So if you are a student of A Course in Miracles, or maybe you're just a person who wants to know more about forgiveness and just, you know, having more peace of mind, you might be interested in those books. And I know they're available through Amazon.com. Now, Susan is also the co-founder for the School for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. And while you're listening to us today, she is going to join me in just a minute, but while you're listening to the show today, one of the things you might want to do is join us on Facebook. We have a private group over there that we do during our radio shows. So if you want to join us that way, one of the easiest ways to get there is to go to the 12radio.com website, and on the left side of the page, click the chat button, and you will be redirected to Facebook, and then you can join us. You know, if you haven't ever been there before, you will have to ask to join, but that's okay because Scott Weaver, who is our producer, is going to let you in. Then you can make comments or you can ask questions, and we don't usually address those during the show, but I want to assure you that I always read your comments and questions, and when I can, I will fit them into another show, or if I can, I might just answer you right there on Facebook. So if you'd like to do that, that would be good. So let's get going. So Susan, welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, CA.
Well, it's great to have you here, and always, you know, choosing great lessons for us to look at. And you are going to actually be speaking in Denver, Colorado at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center coming up this weekend on Sunday, June 5th, right?
Right.
I'll be teaching this lesson?
Yes, I'll be leading the gathering and focusing on this lesson. So it's actually really one, you know, I always say this about lessons, but it really is one of my favorite lessons. And because, as we were talking about earlier, before we started recording, it's one of those lessons that has is very specific about the practice of what it means to try to live A Course in Miracles, what it means to be a student of A Course in Miracles, and to, you know, kind of change the purpose of your life. To healing your mind instead of fleeing the mind, which is what our purpose has been before we come to the Course. And so it gives us that moment-to-moment awareness of how to practice this. But then it also talks about, or it implies at least, a much longer process with this, in which we really are learning to, you know, to change the purpose of our lives over time to a classroom of in which we learn forgiveness from a new part of our mind that we're unaware of usually when we come to the Course, which is symbolized in A Course in Miracles by Jesus, Holy Spirit, are the terms that are used, the characters that are used. But they're really just, it's really just a symbol of this memory of wholeness in our mind that has never been destroyed. And so the Course meets us in the condition we think we're in, here separate in a body, in a seeming world in which they're, you know, filled with other bodies and all these problems and so many challenges and all of this competition and all of the trials that we face. So it's meeting us here in this world and not asking us to deny our experience in the world, but to change the purpose of it to again, you know, learning in any moment what seems to be happening to me is really only a result of a choice in my mind to associate myself and the you that it's addressing is what the Course calls and Ken Wapner calls the decision-making part of our mind. It's the decision-making part of our mind that is choosing in any given moment to identify with one of two teachers, the ego, which is always about, you know, making the idea of an individual self and the importance and specialness and uniqueness of me important, and or this memory of wholeness in our mind, which is symbolized by Jesus, Holy Spirit. And both of those teachers are, you know, are with us at any moment. And we, the decision-making mind that the Course is really addressing, we think it's addressing Susan and CA and our individual selves, but it's really addressing only our mind since that's really all there is, but we don't know that. You know, that part of our mind is always choosing one of those two teachers. And the way that we discover through practice which teacher we've been listening to is how do I feel right now? And as this lesson goes on, it tells us, you know, how can you know, I'm paraphrasing, but which teacher you've chosen in the mind. And it's always, does pain seem real in the perception? Am I experiencing pain? Am I experiencing in my body emotional or physical pain? Do I feel in some way victimized by something or someone outside myself? Or, I mean, that would be true even in the case of pain in the body, where it's a result of an injury where something happened to me, or it's a foreign body in the case of a virus or bacteria or something like that. There's always there's always an other that is causing this problem, even if we can't put our finger on it. You know, that's why we go to doctors, is to try to find the culprit to blame how we're feeling on. And so A Course in Miracles is saying, you know, if you're experiencing any of these symptoms of pain, physical or emotional, it's always a clue, a red flag that you first have unconsciously chosen to identify yourself as an ego, with the ego, which would mean you would be identifying yourself as separate from other selves. And the hidden purpose for doing that, the reason people are born into bodies and you know, fight for to protect their identities and assert their identities and, compete with each other and protect themselves and attack and all of the things that we do as bodies. The reason for that is always because we're secretly trying to prove that we exist apart from God. Because that was our belief in the beginning. That's why the mind split. We believe we exist separately from God, but it's not my fault. So, you know, what I think I did to God, this pushing away God's love, this running away from home and trying to experience my own, myself individually as other than God's will, as other than that perfect oneness joined as one, that had real effects and was really wrong and really sinful. And the guilt over that means that I, you know, the only way to get rid of that guilt and make myself feel better is to surround myself with other bodies that I can point a finger at. But as Ken Wapnick always said, it's a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem because it doesn't make the guilt go away. We just get more and more worked up, you know, when we're out of touch with the unconscious choosing, and so we think we've been victimized by something outside ourselves, and we're not aware that we love it. You know, I come downstairs in the morning and my husband has left a pile of dishes in the sink or something like that. It can be something very, you know, I mean, in the seeming hierarchy of illusions, very trivial, but that's enough to set us off. And now everything that he has done over the years are on the table, you know, we're furious and, you know, look, I mean, you always do this. And, you know, so we luxuriate in being mistreated and victimized. And I mean, just look at, you know, that's the more trivial seeming example. But you know, then you know, we wake up in the morning and we have, you know, all of a sudden we can't put weight on our leg or something like that. Or we have a raging sore throat, or, you know, we have a spot that maybe it's cancer on our arm, or, you know, and on and on. And so it seems like this constant assault from the external world. And then of course in the greater collective, you know, we witness constant terror and you know, victims and victimization, and you know, we're always siding with one side or another in whatever seems to be happening on the news, completely unaware that's exactly what we want. That's what's keeping us mindless. That's what's keeping us feeling, again, that I exist apart from God. But you know, in that case, it would be, but it's not my fault. It's not my well, let's use politics for an example. It's not my party's fault. It's all of those other nutcases, you know, or it's this candidate or this candidate, or it's this, you know, it's this horrible terrorist that's victimizing all these people, and or this country that's you know, cultivating this terrorism, or, you know, and on and on. I mean, we have countless examples of all of that. So this lesson, all things are lessons God would have me learn, kind of just cuts through it, and just you know, Jesus just kind of says, okay, let's just calm down here, and you know, let's try to see if we can look at what's really going on here. You know, if you can kind of stop, you know, you're very, very triggered in all of this, and you can, but can you just kind of stop and maybe entertain the possibility that something else is going on? Because is this helping you? Are you feeling better by having this ego attack? You know, is it really getting rid of the pain in your mind? And you know, of course, the answer, if we're really honest with ourselves, is no, it's not. It's actually making it worse, you know, because it always comes back to then feeling more guilt and believing that we then need to, you know, defend ourselves again. And so that's, you know, so the attack defense cycle just never stops. And so we're constantly in this adrenaline, stressful state where we're just, you know, grinding our teeth and trying to find another and another culprit to rid ourselves of guilt that never goes away. And Jesus is saying, you know, if we can change the purpose of what we're doing, when we're in pain, if we can stop and begin to question it and raise it to doubt and look at it with me, you know, with the part of your mind that knows that where the pain is really coming from, and that there's no need for any of this guilt. There's no, you know, that everybody is the same here. Everybody's suffering from this same psychosis. you know, if you're willing to do that with me and take my hand, you know, we really can calm down about this and begin to experience peace right now. And because what the body does or doesn't do really can't affect the mind at all. You know, the pain is coming from the mind. It's, the pain is not in the body. The body is in the mind, and therefore the pain is in the mind, and that's a result of a mistaken choice. And, you know, if we can begin to look at every moment as a classroom and pay attention to our feelings and our perceptions and our judgments and be as vigilant as we can for doing that, that's how we relieve pain, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the real cure that we're all looking for, and that will work. And you know, it's not an instant process because we're so defended against it. We're so frightened of going back to the mind because we, you know, deliberately fled and made up a story that it was, you know, that we should never go back to the mind because that's the scene of this alleged crime of pushing God's love away and destroying our perfect union. But all of that's a lie. So if you'll look at it with me, I can teach you that in any moment, you know, the peace is still there. The love is still there. And it's not, it's, you know, Jesus, God doesn't know about this. God would never punish you for something that didn't happen, you know, because we still are within God. And, you know, there's nothing really to try to compensate for. And so it's also unnecessary, but that's the gradual process that we're learning. In the immediate process, practice is just, you know, if I'm in pain, where's that really coming from? You know, because where I'm pointing a finger is, that's not it. I'm not upset for the reason I think, less than five in the workbook. You know, peace is still there. So if I'm not feeling it, it must mean that I chose not to.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's out of my fear, out of my defensiveness, my defensive belief that I really did commit this crime. I really did push God's love away, and I can never go back. And that's wrong. I'm wrong about that. So I need a teacher to help me remember that.
Right.
You know, and it's not, you know, we don't have to think of it as being way down the road. It's right now, in any moment, I have an opportunity, you know, and I've been really noticing in myself how easy it is to forget that's what we're supposed to be doing with this course. You know, I read the course all the time, I teach it, I write it. And when I'm in extraordinary pain, I remember to do this. But when I'm in, you know, just normal judgments and watching TV and driving and some of the lesser, you know, seeming illusions out there, I just let a lot go by, you know. I really do.
Yeah.
and so, you know, and yet I say that this is really, you know, that this is the new purpose of my life. Well, I mean, that there's nothing wrong with that, but that sure tells me that there's a part of me that's very, very defended against doing this, because if I really wanted to learn it, I would be learning it all the time, you know,
mm-hmm.
because I can learn things that I really want to learn, you know.
Right. And how does the saying go? I mean, I'm trying to remember if it's actually in the course or if it's just something that was said to Helen, but you are much too tolerant of mind wandering.
Mind wandering, right. And mind wandering is projection. You know, it's when we the decision maker leaves the mind, vacates the mind, follows the ego into the world, and forgets it has a choice about any of this. You know, completely abdicates responsibility, right?
Right.
And you know, is only involved in pointing fingers at all of the other perpetrators out there. So, you know, the more mindful we can be, the more present we can be with this practice. The Course isn't asking us at all to resign from the world. It's asking us to resign as our own teacher.
Yes. Because we've been badly taught.
Because we've been badly taught. But, you know, we have another teacher. And we're not aware. It's a really a very, very gradual process through this practice that it begins to dawn on us that we are not, at first intellectually and you know, very, very gradually with a lot of practice over time, that I'm not, you know, the person that's deciding this is not Susan, it's not CA. It's a mind outside this dream that's calling all the shots. And it's doing that for a reason. And so, you know, I have two parts of my mind. I have a right-minded, you know, I can make that the purpose right-minded. I can shift to being right-minded, or I can choose to stay with rooting it myself more deeply in the dream by continuing to believe the ego, you know, to identify with myself as an ego. But the way out is the questioning of what the cause of this is. And the cause of any pain is always the choice in the mind to run away from God again, to make pain, the body real, to make pain real, to make the tiny man idea the belief that I could separate from God had real consequences. And caused me to run away from the mind because it deserved punishment.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in each, or rather in the third paragraph of this lesson, it says, each lesson has a central thought, the same in all of them. The form alone has changed with different circumstances and events, with different characters and different themes, apparent but not real. They are the same in fundamental content.
Right.
And, you know, that I love, and just this lesson in general, how every few paragraphs it comes back to and it says, forgive and you will see this differently.
Right.
And always bringing you back to a core fundamental truth.
Absolutely. And it keeps hammering away on that idea that it's all the same. You know, there is no hierarchy of illusions. The forms that this this mistaken belief of separation and identification with the idea of individuality takes are many and wildly different in form. But in content, they're all coming from, again, that guilt in the mind over believing this really happened and now required, you know, defense. And so everything that we're doing as bodies is trying to make up for that belief. And so in that sense, there's, you know, it's pretty easy and pretty simple if we recognize, if we're paying attention to our judgments and our thoughts and our feelings as we're being asked to do, and being mindful when we're feeling anything but kindly toward everyone, including ourselves, then we know we've chosen to identify with the ego.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real, there should not be any question or argument about that. And yet, of course, you know, of course there is. We argue with Jesus, we argue with others, we argue, you know, the last thing we really want to do is to return to peace, you know, because, I mean, although we may really think that that's what we want, where is peace? Well, it's not here. It's not in the body. It's back in the mind. And the mind has become very fearful to us. So that's why we need a teacher. We need a hand to hold where we can, you know, he says after what you just read, and I'll just reread that those couple of sentences.
Uh-huh.
It says the form alone is changed with different circumstances and events, with different characters and different themes, apparent but not real. They are the same in fundamental content. It is this, forgive and you will see this differently. Well, that implies that it's a choice, but I need help to see this differently because I can't see that by myself. You know,
mm-hmm.
I need to have my right mind involved with this, because I can't, the ego can't watch, you know, the decision maker and the ego in collusion are only the ego. The decision maker leaves the mind when it identifies with the ego. So going back to the mind, to the decision making mind is how we're choosing against the ego, our identification with the ego. And that means that we're going back and saying to the right mind, I need help, you know, help me look at the ego with you, because that part of our mind doesn't take the ego seriously and doesn't, you know, sees that it's all the same, sees beyond these wild differences that are defenses and barriers to the memory of love, and just says, this is just silly, you know. There's all of this attack and conflict that you're seeing, and all of this pain that you're experiencing. I mean, Jesus doesn't mock the pain or tell us that, you know, that we shouldn't treat the pain and be kind to ourselves, because that would be unkind. But he does say, let's look at the cause of this, because there is a way for you to be peaceful and without all this pain, regardless of what the body does or doesn't do. And you know, ultimately all bodies, I mean, we're born into bodies that are programmed to deteriorate and die. So we're going to be, you know, bodies go through terrible things here. And so, you know, ultimately it's, we really do want to learn that we can, as we age, as things become difficult, more and more seemingly difficult in our world, we can still be at peace. We can still be loving toward each other. We can still be loving toward ourselves. We can feel, we can grow up and learn to experience the body the way Jesus experienced it, you know, as not suffering. And to also be in that process learning true empathy, which is to recognize that everybody thinks they're suffering here, but you know, they're wrong too. And it's all the same call for love. It's my call for love, my fear that is at work in anything I'm seeing out there. And so I would automatically be loving toward everyone and everything when I'm aligned with when I'm choosing to align with the right mind. So it's a win-win situation for everyone. And you know, I mean, along the way to awakening, we can still find peace. You know, we don't have to wait till we're at the top of the ladder. We can find it now.
Right. Well, and you know what? I think I've mentioned this before because it just seems that it goes along with this, and every once in a while it does come in my mind. But there is a woman named Temple Grandin, and I believe that she lives in Fort Collins, Colorado, or originally that's where she's from. But she grew up with autism. But as an adult, she has become, she's kind of, I don't know if famous is the word, but she's written several books. But she's become well known because she has done work with humanizing basically the industry of meat production, specifically with cows. But I think almost anybody doing things with animals, she has, she's taught them something, and basically from her autism. You know, knowing what it was like to be that way. And she has really helped both commercial and I think individual people do some things specifically with animals. But the reason I'm bringing this up is I was reading one of her books and she makes the comment, she's talking about the separation between pain and suffering. And she said pain is more of, whether it's psychological or whether it's physical, pain is more of a physiological response. But suffering is the perception, the interpretation that we put on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that she was, I'm sure that's an idea in psychology that's been around forever. But she's the first person I had ever heard articulate that. And I'll tell you, that was such a big thing. And I think of it with a course, because just like you said, we change our perception. The actual world, the actual thing that's going on for us may not change.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, the body may still be doing that thing, or we may still have that issue with that person. But our perception is different because, in other words, we could actually have pain but not suffer as a result. And that may not be the perfect words, but that's it. We can be at peace regardless of the circumstances because the peace is an interpretation of the mind. It's a choice that we make depending on what teacher we choose.
Absolutely. And we've all had that experience where our bodies are in pain and, I've had that experience with practicing the course too, where it suddenly, I do change my mind and I do take Jesus's hand and, you know, maybe it's maybe not immediate, but I have a shift in which the pain is not important anymore. And so it's not front and center. It's not distracting me from peace. It's not, interfering with peace. It's not making me cranky or feeling victimized, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we can, whereas when I'm, we see that contrast when we start practicing this. And so we're very, very aware of when we're not right-minded, I think.
Yes.
And we, you know, which are we, because we go through resistance, we can go into quite lengthy periods still of that. But, when I'm not right-minded, when I've chosen the ego, everything's wrong. You know,
yeah.
I get weird. We're getting older. We get weird pains. Like you wake up one morning and all of a sudden you have like, it feels like somebody's putting a knife in your heel, you know, and you're like, what's that? And then the next day it's something else, you know? So, but what I notice is then it's like everything's wrong. Then you're also, you're triggered, you're emotionally, you know, it seems like everything just is making you mad. And it's, you know, again, it's that we're not conscious that we've made a decision because we so quickly, as lesson 136, I think it is, sickness is a defense against the truth, talks about the rapidity with which we choose this makes it seem as if, you know, we haven't chosen. Because we so quickly forget, but you know, and then we experience ourselves as you know, this is like this random attack from the outside. But in fact, you know, we can train ourselves to say, wait a minute, if I'm experiencing pain, this random pain out of nowhere, what it means is I first must have chosen the ego as my teacher. I first must have chosen to, again, you know, run away from the mind, run away from God, from the love that is there. And is that what I really want? You know, I can stop that spiral that seems to happen from the moment that I open, you know, that I awake and there's pain in my heel, and then the whole day goes to hell, you know?
Right.
So that's the idea of vigilance. You can stop and say, you know, wait a minute, I can give it a new purpose. If this is a classroom, then this can be a great lesson for me to see that I can still be peaceful throughout my day. You know, I don't have to use this as I think I often do as an excuse to just like, you know, just go off the forgiveness wagon, you know?
Right. That's a good way of putting it, yeah. Too, Susan.
Yeah, you know, it's like, then you're just like, okay, like, you know, let it rip.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we're invested in doing that. You know, there's part of us that really wants to feel victimized. So we will have a series of events that, you know, then we go downstairs and we get an email and we choose, as you're saying, to interpret the email as an attack, you know?
Right.
And you know, we've already like had a meltdown about the dishes in the sink, and then, you know, we get in our car later that day, and then, you know, somebody cuts us off in traffic, and then guess what? We have the news on, and we get to learn about something that someone, you know, one of the candidates has just said, or, so, you know, that's all a choice.
Right. Well, and in fact, I'm not going to go into the details, but Susan and I were having this conversation earlier about a situation that's going on with me in which I'm really being triggered. And I said, you know, I just want to get your take on this. And one of the things I admitted to her is the very same situation. I had compared notes with, two colleagues, and they're delighted with the situation.
Right.
And so, that's the thing. It's the same situation. And my two colleagues are delighted and I'm not. I'm quite frankly, you know, kind of all bent out of shape about it. But even more than that, it's like I'm bent out of shape because they're not bent out of shape.
Well, absolutely. Because, you know, the whole reason that we ask for other people's opinions is usually so that they'll, you know, we can form a group against whatever's happening to us. Right. And very often people will jump in again because we love to feel victimized. And so we love to identify with victims, you know, and go, you know, I mean, women friends do that all the time. I don't know if guys do the same thing. I'm sure they do in their own way. they have different ways of communicating it, but, you know, I mean, you get upset with something and you're, you know, you get together with a couple of women friends and people just, you know, you start talking and you just dive in and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and everybody's triggered at that point. And, you know, and you feel great for like momentarily, you know, but then you don't feel good because it's like, you just slimed someone. You know?
Right.
So it doesn't feel good, you know, just like the political stuff. I mean, that's another thing that I used to be very, very involved in politics and, you know, really quite self-righteous about my opinions. And I kind of can't get away with that as much anymore because it's just, you know, even watching some of the news programs that, you know, are catered to or singing to the choir, my choir.
Yeah.
It's not as much fun as it used to be. It starts to really kind of just be, I think I'd rather just go, you know, watch something on Netflix, you know? But it's always this us or them and that we're identifying with. And what Jesus is saying, you know, actually the next paragraph, maybe we could go to that. He says, certain it is that all distress does not appear to be but unforgiveness. Yet that is the content underneath the form. It is the sameness which makes learning sure, because the lesson is so simple that it cannot be rejected in the end. Well, it can be rejected for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it usually is. But ultimately, as I was saying, you know, the pain of this becomes intolerable. I mean, we tolerate a lot of pain.
Yes.
But, and you know, we're not at the, we're probably not done yet. But, you know, eventually the end is sure. Jesus isn't worried about us making it. You know, that's why he doesn't become involved. And I mean, that's why us taking our specific forms of any of this to him. He just kind of says, well, you know, we've talked about this, you know, it's, it's all the same. You know, forgive and this will, and you will see this differently. You'll be at peace. And so, you know, if you interpret it with me, you'll see that it's all just coming from this same mistaken belief that we push God's love away and the excruciating guilt that we feel over that and are trying to get rid of it through a really like kind of stupid avenue, you know? that doesn't make any sense. It's just insane. It's just silly.
Yeah, and in this paragraph, it goes on to say, no one can hide forever from a truth so very obvious that it appears in countless forms and yet is recognized as easily in all of them if one but wants to see the simple lesson there.
Right, right. And that's the thing, is the motivation, right? I mean, if I wanted to see peace instead of this, I would see peace instead of this. So there's a part of us that really doesn't want to learn this, and that's what makes it hard. But what ultimately does motivate us, and he's going to go on to talk more about this, is again the pain. You know, I mean, it becomes what finally motivates us to choose is pain. What motivated the course to come into the seeming dream, the seeming world, was pain, was the pain of strife in Helen and Bill's relationship. That you know, and the constant combat and conflict that they were experiencing between each other, in which, you know, which caused Bill finally to turn to Helen in a moment of openness and say, you know, there has to be another way. And there has to be another way of relating to each other here, because this is intolerable.
Yes. And for anybody who might not recognize who Helen and Bill are, because there might be new people or people that aren't familiar with this. Helen Schuchman is the person who channeled this information, who took down the Course in Miracles. And she was a psychologist in New York, and her colleague, and I think her boss, was Bill Thetford. And there was incredible just, you know, bickering and back and forth and back and forth in the department. And Bill at one point said to her, there's just got to be another way. Right? Isn't that what happened,
yeah.
Suzanne?
Yes. And that was what, you know, invited the course doesn't use the word channeled, but the scribing.
Right. Okay. Yes.
The course. And, but yeah, it was, I mean, the, you know, Helen began to, after that, sometime after that, began to take this down. You know, she basically, she didn't, my understanding is that she probably didn't hear a voice. It was more like she saw the words, but it doesn't matter. She was getting this message, and, you know, even though it was frightening to her and not all that welcome in some ways, she nonetheless took it down and, you know, recognized that there was something very powerful going on here. And so did Bill. And Bill, you know, Bill was her collaborator and, you know, for 7 years, I believe it was she would go in early to work at Columbia, they were in the psychology department, and he would, you know, she had it down in shorthand and he would type it up. So that was quite a collaboration between people who had a very conflicted relationship. And yet, you know, a part of their mind was choosing to change the purpose of their relationship to healing. And that invitation was by recognizing their pain, you know. And so the message, the course, comes in the form of, you know, addressing us in our relationship. So it's not just referring to pain in the body, although it talks quite a bit about that, but it's referring to this constant emotional pain we're in, you know, constantly trying to draw lines in the sand and take sides and blame each other and attack each other, or it talks about our special relationships and all of our neediness and constantly needing others to comply with our wishes and you know, fulfill our desires and to fill this sense of lack that we feel within over, you know, which really comes from the belief that we ran away from the only real love that there is, which is our union with God. And so we're constantly trying to fill up this hole that we, you know, we're certainly perceive within ourselves. But there's nothing really there, you know, we're in the wrong place. We're seeking for love where it can't be found.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so many of us come to the course, I think, in a very similar way. We've tried everything else.
Yep.
And there's got to be another way. We are in pain. We do not feel at peace. And we're searching and saying, there's got to be another way.
Yes, and I mean, even after, as you know, CA, even after we come to the course, it's not like an instant fix, you know.
Right.
it took us, you know, we've taught ourselves, we were very deeply rooted in this dream, And we are so defended against the mind, and it's terribly unconscious. It's buried very deeply within our minds. So it's going to be a process, over time of this looking, of this forgiveness, of, you know, being willing to question our experience of pain. And that is really what we're being asked to do. And that takes vigilance. That takes a lot of practice. And as I was saying earlier, it's very challenging because, you know, we're very secretly defended against this, and it's so we tolerate our mind wandering way too much, as you were saying. Mm-hmm. It's very easy for us to become very mindless again. And certainly, you know, we live in a culture that, you know, celebrates mindlessness. I'm laughing as I'm sitting here because we're on Skype, and it finally calmed down, but there was, for a while, there were these, it was a flashing ads from, I don't know if they were coming from, you know, Facebook or whatever, or Skype, but, you know, at first there were all these ads for pharmaceuticals that were coming up for all different sorts of horrible diseases. And then it's been fashion for like the last 20 minutes. And so, you know, here we are talking about how we're trying to become minds and not, you know, to learn that we're a mind and not a body, but we're constantly bombarded by messages that, glorify the body or terrorize the body or promise to make a better body or a prettier body or a healthier body. And, you know, it's very tantalizing to us. You know, we still, a part of us still thinks that we can make a better self, you know, that spirituality is about being a more spiritual ego and a more spiritual, purifying the body so that it can be a temple for the spirit. And that's ridiculous. The body's purpose was to flee the mind. And that's not a spiritual thing. It was a defense against against spirit. And so, you know, the body isn't evil, but we can change. But the purpose that the ego's given it is not kind, and it's not spiritual. And so changing the purpose of the body really, really means, you know, to a classroom. From the Course's perspective, we change it to the healing of the mind, to learning that it's, you know, the perceptions of the body, to use and focus on the perceptions of the body and recognize that pain, any kind of pain, all of it, from minor twinges of annoyances and, you know, little stabs of pain in our heel to wars and cancer and all of it are, you know, they're all defenses against the truth. They're all barriers to love, and we can change the purpose of them to healing the mind and remembering that love, you know, love has not only survived, but everyone is still contained in it. No, there's no victims and victimizers. There's, you know, nothing, not one note in heaven's song was missed, as the Course says really poetically.
Yes, and you know, you had alluded to this before, but there's a paragraph in here I want to read, and it goes right along with what you were saying. How can you tell when you're seeing wrong or someone else is failing to perceive the lesson he should learn? Does pain seem real in the perception? If it does, be sure the lesson is not learned, and there remains an unforgiveness hiding in the mind that sees the pain through eyes the mind directs. And I'll tell you, when I read that, I think of, you know, kind of like having a splinter in your finger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going along and you don't even know. And then all of a sudden you've got pain. And you can't see the splinter, but you kind of dig around and you get a piece out and you go, okay, I got it. But then, is there still pain? You know, is there still something bugging you, frustrating? You know, do you still feel pain? Well, if you do, then there remains a piece of the splinter. There remains an unforgiveness hiding in the mind that sees the pain through those eyes. And I think, you know, there again, you know, sometimes we try to make spirituality so complex. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those lessons that in some ways kind of keeps just bringing it back. You know, every lesson is really the same. Every situation is always the same. And do you know whether or not you've learned it? Do you feel any pain? Are you at perfect peace?
That's right.
Because if you're not, then there's still a splinter in there.
That's right. I mean, a mild, so that's why it's so important for us to look at the mild twinge of annoyance, you know, to let those judgments, those little judgments go, to not let, you know, to really, again, you know, bring ourselves back to the moment. And which teacher right now am I choosing, you know, to be vigilant for the pain? I mean, the Course is really a negative path in that sense, that it's looking at the negative. It's not, you know, it's not trying to make a better self. It's not a course in positive thinking. It's a course in watching our minds for the negative.
Mm-hmm.
And where we're pointing and where that negative is being pointed, you know, the external factors that we're blaming it on. And that, because that always is our clue, again, that we're interpreting with the ego, that you know, that there is pain, or that it's hiding in the mind, that it's deliberately, we've gone mindless again. We've deliberately forgotten that we're, you know, that we are the mind directing this. We've forgotten we're the decision-making mind, that we have a choice, and we believe we're victims again.
And, right.
You know, so whenever we're feeling pain, there's always somebody at the other end of that finger that we believe is the cause. And, you know, remember, because the ego's agenda is always to prove that I really do exist apart from God, but it's not my fault. It's blanks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we have to have a continual parade of culprits out there. And, you know, if we solve one problem, then another can be found, right?
Right.
You know, if we find one special love partner and they betray us, well, we'll just find another, you know, that will meet our needs. I mean, we're just, it's all about us. It's all about preserving that idea of an ego that is, you know, victimized, is always about to be victimized by another ego and has to protect itself all the time and, you know, constantly needs to also fill itself up to fill this lack that it feels within with others, with
right.
Taking from others. And feel for perfectly justified about that because, you know, again, look at how damaged I am.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, but which is, you know, we've talked about before, because we come into bodies and, you know, we're these need machines, and immediately we have parents and siblings and families, extended families that don't meet our needs. We could never meet all the needs we have. And so we begin to feel, you know, to justify our sense of victimization that we came here to experience.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, I know we're getting a little bit close to our time. Not quite. We still have a few more minutes. But one thing I wanted to bring up, and I think I'm mostly directing this to people who may be relatively new to the Course or may have just kind of jumped into this conversation today. And as you're doing these lessons, I mean, they really do build one upon the other, which is why it's important to start with number one. So by the time you get to 193, I mean, you've been at this for quite a while. But this is where I would say, to me, there's a sense of humor in terms of the authorship but I also think it's more than a sense of humor, and you need to pay attention to it. And that is, like, the lesson title is "All Things Are Lessons God Would Have Me Learn."
Right.
And yet the first sentence says, "God does not know of learning."
Right.
And that's where it's kind of funny. But if you continue to read, and I don't know that I'm going to articulate this quite right, but it's, we all want to believe that somehow God has set up this obstacle course for us, right?
Yes.
And I think one of the things this lesson says is, yeah, these are all things God would have you learn, because God wants you to be happy. God wants there to be laughter. God wants you to have peace of mind. But it's not because God has set the lessons in place. There's a distinction. You know, God did not set up the obstacle course, and therefore God is sitting there. And so it's like, okay, CA, Susan, here's your next lesson. It doesn't work like that.
Right. No, it isn't. It isn't. Nobody, the Holy Spirit, God doesn't give us any lessons. right. Right. And it is that contradiction. So, I mean, this is always this, that's a good example of the two levels that the Course speaks to us on. And level one in that first paragraph, you know, talks about how God does not know of learning. God doesn't know about the world, you know?
Right.
God doesn't know about us. I mean, there's nothing other than God. Only God is, only our undifferentiated union within God is true. But that's not our experience in the dream. So Jesus speaks kind of out of both sides of his mouth.
He does.
and says, you know, all things are lessons God would have you learn, because he wants us to believe that God still loves us, because our story to ourselves is that, you know, we sinned against God. And so the God that we've made up is, you know, recognizes sin, recognizes, the punishment. And so Jesus is always trying to portray God as this, as, you know, this very, very loving God that cannot be complete without us, and wants us to come home, and, you know, is holding out his open arms and, you know, weeps without us in all these different ways that he puts us in the course. But in truth, that's not the case. So he also uses the word God interchangeably very often with Holy Spirit or Jesus, you know, as just another symbol of that right mind. And you know, that too does not give us lessons. The lessons are what's happening right now. What do I perceive? You know, that's my classroom. That's my lesson for the day. My many lessons for the day. At this moment, what seems to be, you know, the cause of my pain? That's my classroom. That's my lesson. I wake up and I have that heel pain, or I go downstairs and see those dishes in the sink. I can, you know, and I feel attacked. And I feel angry, and I'm pointing a finger at my lack of peace, you know, and blaming it on another person. That's my lesson, that right now, you know, is that the real cause? That, you know, that's the practice, is saying, you know, the forgiveness is raising to doubt the cause of what I think that, you know, my pain is in any given moment. And asking for help to see things differently means, you know, help me to find the peace and to see that nobody's guilty here. That's, you know, first I chose to throw peace away. I chose first to believe that I could be other than loving, and that others could be other, you know, that we could be other than loving. And that's a lie, you know, and the peace is still there. The love is still there. There's no one is guilty here. There's nothing outside my mind that could take that piece away from me unless I first chose it.
Right. And that's a great place to leave this show.
Yep.
You know, just nobody's guilty here.
Right.
Nobody's guilty here.
Right.
I love that. So, you know, just that whole little wrap up that you did at the end, that was just perfect. So, Susan, thank you so much for being here today. And I'd like to announce that you can find Susan on her website at www.foraysinforgiveness.com. And that's FORAYS, foraysinforgiveness.com. And you can also find Susan at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center this Sunday, which is June 5th. And what time is that, Susan?
The gathering is at 11 a.m.
Okay. So if you're in the Denver metro area and you would like to meet Susan, or maybe you just want to be with a group of like-minded people, find the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center. It's easy to Google that. It's basically in Denver, approximately Bucktel and Colorado Boulevard. But anyway, you can Google that and get more information, or you could even, write to me and I could get you that information as well. But thank you everybody for being here. And thanks to everybody who participated in the chat room. And thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. And again, next week I will have, Michael Murdad. So any of you who are familiar with him and his work in his books, you might want to join me next week. So, Susan, any other parting comments?
No, I don't think so. Just remembering that you know, we have a choice.
Right, we have a choice.
In any given moment, you know, we could feel peace right now, and we could take another step toward learning, you know, healing our mind at any given moment by changing our mind, by changing our inner teacher. So.
You know, nice.
Yeah, and we could feel better.
Yeah, we can. Okay, and I would also like to remind you that Susan and I are both, I guess what I would, I don't know if it's right to say old school, but both of us really, really love Ken Wapnick, who has really been just an outstanding teacher of A Course in Miracles. And his website, The Foundation for A Course in Miracles, is where you can find not only an online bookstore, but you can find a lot of online learning aids, a lot of information, a lot of articles. He's written a lot of articles. other people have written. So if you're new to the course, or maybe if you're not new to the course and you just want to, you know, get a little support, that's a wonderful website to know about. And that's www.facim.org. So the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. So I would always like to remind you of that one as well. So Susan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. And thank you for that reminder about the foundation. And one more thing about them I just wanted to say is you can also go on the foundation's website, and the teaching staff that worked with Ken for so many years is still teaching classes in Temecula and classes that you can sign up for and stream at home. And I've been doing them just about every month, and they're just extraordinary. The learning just goes deeper and deeper, and it's really, really very helpful. So if you haven't tried that, you know, take a look. There's some classes on there now that you can sign up for.
Okay. And I've streamed one of those classes, and I was just blown away. I was blown away for two reasons, because of the professionalism of it, the level of the teaching, and how cheap it was. I couldn't believe it. It was $100 for a 3-day course.
Yeah, it's really a bargain. I mean, they are a foundation that, you know, is really just promoting the course and Ken's teachings, and has been doing this great work for so many years. And we're
it's just phenomenal.
It's the service that they've offered us, continuing. So,
okay, well, thanks for that, Susan, and everybody. I hope you have a great week, and until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.